This week's Parshas Vayigash. And we're actually going to start from the middle of the Parsha. And that is, we're going to start on page 256. And at this point in the Parsha, Yosef has already revealed himself to his brothers. The brothers have already returned to Yaakov, letting him know that Yosef is still alive. And that is where we're going to take it from. So this is Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Chaf Ches. Okay. Vayomer Yisrael, and Yisrael said, Rav, there is great joy to me, Rashi says, Oy Yosef ben Chai, my son Yosef is still alive. Elcha ve'erenu b'tera mamus, I will go and see him before I die. The next pasuk aleph reads, Vayisa Yisrael v'chala shaloi, and Yisrael traveled in all that he had. Vayavoy be'er sheva, and he came to be'er sheva. Vayizbach zvachim le'lohei aviv Yitzchak, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak. So Rashi asks, why is Yitzchak only offering sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak? Why not to the God of his grandfather Abraham also? Why is it only mentioning Yitzchak? So Rashi answers, this is the Rashi to the left column, two lines from the bottom, Chayev Adam Bekavod Aviv Yosef Mekvod Ziknai. One is obligated, has a greater obligation to honor his father than his grandfather. Lefikach Tala BeYitzchak V'loi BeAbraham. And therefore, when it came now to bringing sacrifices to Hashem, it was to the God of Yitzchak and not to the God of Abraham. So even though it would seem that he could have mentioned both, Rashi says he mentions his father because it is more important, it's a greater obligation to honor your father than your grandfather. That's Rashi's explanation. The Ramban is not too happy with this explanation because Ramban says that we find in other places in which Yaakov mentions both Abraham and Yitzchak. Yaakov offers a prayer, Lokei Avi Abraham, Lokei Avi Yitzchak, the God of my father Abraham, the God of my father Yitzchak. Or you should just say he offered sacrifices to Hashem. You know, don't mention any of them. There doesn't seem to be a need to have to mention any of them. And in other places it mentions both. So why not mention both here? It's true that a person has a greater obligation to honor his father, but it doesn't exclude honoring his grandfather. So therefore the Ramban has a whole different explanation. And his explanation is, Ki kasher bar Yaakov leredes Mitzrayim, as Yaakov is now going down to Egypt, ro'a ki agolus yaskol boy ubezaro. He realized that the exile is now beginning with him and his children. By bris ben abisarim, Hashem told Abraham that your children will be exiled for 400 years, will be exiled and oppressed for 400 years in a land that is not theirs. Yaakov realizes this is happening now. And even though the pasuk said before that it was Yaakov's decision to go down on his own, but he realizes that this is going to be fulfilling, this is the beginning of the exile into Egypt that Hashem told Abraham about. And as a matter of fact, if sages say, if not for this whole episode of Yosef, and Yaakov having the ability to choose to go down, if not for all of that, Yaakov would have been forced down. He would have gone down in chains, Chazal say. That means there was a point of time when the exile into Egypt had to start. It had to be fulfilled. It was the prophecy given to Abraham by Bris ben Abisarim. If this whole episode with Yosef would not have happened, then the Egyptians would have gone and shackled Yaakov and his family and dragged them down as slaves to Egypt. But that didn't have to happen because of the fact that Yosef was already down there and Yosef became the viceroy and now Yaakov was comfortably and willingly going down. But I didn't take away from the fact that Yaakov realizes is that this is the beginning of Golus, of exile. Upachad bimenu, and he was very fearful of it. Ramban doesn't say what his fear was, but he was very fearful of it. V'zavach zavachim rabim lepachad aviv Yitzchak. And therefore, here it says that he brought zavachim, he brought sacrifices. The Ramban says, plural, he brought many sacrifices to the God, to the fear, to the God of his father Yitzchak. Shaloi tehemidas hadin mesucha kenegdai. Basically, to soften up the attribute of judgment, of justice, that was now going to be meted out to Yaakov. Yaakov was going into Galus. He was going to be enslaved. This is a manifestation of Midas Hadin. This is a manifestation of Hashem's strict judgment. Hashem makes a decree. Hashem is fulfilling that decree. And it's seemingly a decree that's without mercy. Now, Yaakov, because of his fear of that, brings many sacrifices in order to soften up, to bring to appease, to soften up, to make lighter this attribute of judge of justice that is going to be meted out against him. And he does this to the God of his father Yitzchak. Now, the Ramban, at least at this point, doesn't explain, though, why is he talking about Yitzchak. Again, the question is, why to his father Yitzchak and not to his father Avraham? But my understanding is because the attribute of Yitzchak, Avraham's attribute was chesed, was kindness. That was the attribute that Avraham excelled in. Yitzchak excelled in the attribute of gevura, strength, which is actually interchangeable with din, with judgment. Where Yitzchak does everything based on strict judgment, not based on mercy, but based on deserving, based on worthiness. That is the attribute of strict judgment. That's the attribute of gevura, of strength. Yaakov sees himself now falling into a situation of coming into a situation of midas hadin, strict justice, strict judgment from Hashem. That's the attribute of Yitzchak, and it's now to the God of his father Yitzchak, the God of his father Yitzchak, whose attribute was judgment. He now brings sacrifices to the God of to the God of his father Yitzchak, to the God of strict judgment, to Hashem's attribute of strict judgment. He now offers sacrifices to soften it, to make it easier. So the reason why he's mentioning Yitzchak here is because of the fact that Yitzchak's attribute is judgment, is justice. Hashem is now going to mete that out to Yaakov, and now therefore, when Yaakov wants to soften that to some degree, he wants to lessen, he wants to soften it. It shouldn't be so harsh. When he wants to make it less harsh, bring sacrifices, he brings it to the God of his father, Yitzchak, whose attribute was judgment.
The prophecy was given to Abraham.
Right? Correct.
So, well, another explanation is that he just didn't want to bring up Abraham's name as sort of rubbing the fact that that punishment was...
Okay. All right.
But wasn't Yaakov 130 years old at that point? When did he expect to go to Egypt? We never hear that he planted at Egypt before. You said the fulfillment of the dream, he'd have to go to Egypt.
I didn't say anything about fulfillment of the dream, he'd have to go to Egypt. I said it's the fulfillment of the prophecy of Bris ben Abisarim.
Okay,
of the exile. Yaakov didn't know, until this point, Yaakov didn't know when it was going to happen. Now he realized it's happening.
Did it happen in his lifetime or not?
I don't know. All I know is that right now, he sees it happening. Mm-hmm. He sees it starting right now. Okay? And then the Ramban continues with something very interesting, and that is that the kinds of sacrifices, the word sacrifices here that are used is zevachim. The word zevachim is usually used to portray what we call a carbon shlamim, a peace offering, which is not completely not an ola is a completely burnt offering. Shlamim is an offering where part of it goes on the altar, part of it goes to the kohen, part of it goes to the owners. So Yaakov here is bringing shlamim, something that we do not find before. But Omar HaKosav Zavachim, the Pasuk uses the word Zavachim when it's describing the sacrifices, to bring out the point that these sacrifices were not burnt offerings like his forefathers had brought. Ki Avraham Oilei Sikriv, Avraham brought burnt offerings. V'abriseinu Amru, and our sages said, V'hikrivu b'nei noach shlamim, B'nei Noach, meaning not the Jewish people, if you're a Ben Noach, they don't bring shlamim, they bring burnt offerings. When Noach brought the sacrifices, it says explicitly, he brought olos, that means burnt offerings. But Yaakov, because of the fact that he was fearful of what Hashem was going to bring upon him, he therefore brought a shlamim korban, a peace offering. Why is the korban shlamim called a peace offering? Because it brings shamatilin shalom ba'olam. A peace offering brings peace to the world. Therefore, that was the kind of sacrifice that Yaakov wanted to bring to now soften the judgment that was going to be brought upon him. So according to the Ramban, what's happening here is that Yaakov realizes he's going into Galus. Yaakov wants to now soften up, so to speak, the Midas Hadin, the attribute of judgment that's going to be meted out against him. This is why the God of his father Yitzchak is mentioned here, because of the fact that Yaakov is dealing with the attribute of judgment. And he's bringing Zvachim, he's bringing peace offerings, because it's that kind of karma that he wants to bring in order to, so to speak, soften up the judgment that's going to be brought upon him. Okay, so that's the Ramban's approach. I'm going to share with you a very interesting Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma wants to offer an explanation as to why it says here to the God of his father Yitzchak, because of the fact that there's a Gemara in the Megillah that says that Yaakov was punished for not honoring his father for 22 years. Yosef was away from Yaakov, the amount of time that Yaakov was away from Yitzchak. The entire period of time that Yaakov went to Laban, that entire period of time was a time that he did not honor his father. That, I believe, is where the Gemara, the Medrash, says that Yaakov, one of the things that Yaakov feared about his brother Esav was that his brother Esav had the merit of keeping out of honoring his father while he didn't. Because he was away for all this period of time by Laban, 14 years for the wives, six more years working. There's also, I think, part of the calculation is perhaps also... No, that doesn't get included. But this period of time that he was away by Laban, Yosef was now taken away from him. That same period of time that he was not by his father, because of the fact that he did not honor his father, says the Meshech Chachma, he was now afraid that not only was he going to be missing Yosef for that amount of years for not honoring his father, but Shema Yaanish Mida Keneged Mida. He was afraid that he would be punished measure for measure. He didn't honor his father, Yosef wouldn't honor him. That's what he was afraid of. So not only was Yosef away from him for the amount of years that he didn't honor his father, but he actually thought that perhaps he'd be punished even further, that just as he didn't honor his father, Yosef wouldn't honor him. And therefore, he brought these sacrifices to arouse mercy for himself over the fact that it was not by his father Yitzchak to care for him, to honor him.
Did he know the time? I mean,
I don't know. But here it says that the point of Meshech Chachma saying is that he offered the sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak. Why are you mentioning here Yitzchak specifically? The answer is because Yaakov was looking for mercy to the God of his father Yitzchak. He was looking to mercy to Hashem over the fact that he had not honored his father all that period of time, and that should arouse mercy for him, that it shouldn't be punished measure for measure, that just as he did not honor his father, that Yosef wouldn't honor him. So that's the Meshech Chachma's suggestion about why it says here, the God of his father, Yitzchak. Okay. Let's read on. Vayomer Elokim liYisrael b'mareis halayla. And Hashem said to Yisrael in the visions of the night, Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov. He said, Yaakov Yaakov. Vayomer, and Yaakov responded, Hineni, here I am. Vayomer, and he said, Anoichi Okel Elokei Avicha, I am the God, the God of your father. Al Tira Mer de Mitzrayim, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. Hilagoi Gadol Asim Hashem, I shall make you there for a great nation. I will go down with you to Egypt. And I shall bring you up also elevated. And Yosef will place his hands on your eyes. This is Hashem's vision to Yaakov. So the first thing is the fact that when the Pasuk says, Vayomer Elokim liYisrael, Hashem spoke to Yisrael. And what did he call him? Yaakov. Hashem is calling him Yaakov specifically here. And the Ramban says that the reason why he is calling him specifically Yaakov Achar Shomar Loi Hashem Loi Kare Shimcha Yaakov Kim Yisrael Yeshemecha. We know that previously Hashem said to Yaakov that your name will not be called Yaakov anymore, rather your name is Yisrael. It means Hashem agreed to the Malach's change in his name. Why is Hashem calling him Yaakov, Yaakov? Hashem should say Yisrael, Yisrael. Okay, the answer is Avokara Yaakov Lermais Ki Ata La Yashur Imalaikim Manusha Vayuchal Voyeh Beves Avadim Achelene Gamaloi Kimi Ata Hagolis Taschabai. The name Yisrael represents what? What did the Malach say to Yaakov? Ki Sarisim Elohim V'Manashim. Because you strove with God, you strove with the angels and with people, and you came out on top. That was the name Yisrael. Hashem is now hinting to Yaakov, no, now your name is not Yisrael. You can't carry that name right now. You cannot carry that name right now, that name of striving with people and coming out on top, because actually, now you're entering a stage of exile, where you have to, well, you're going to be subjugated to others. So again, part of this was how Hashem was alluding to the fact he was alluding to the fact that Yaakov is now going into exile, over the fact that now he calls him Yaakov instead of Yisrael. Because the name Yisrael, to some degree, is inappropriate now, but rather because of the fact that Yisrael represents the fact that he struggled with people, and he came out on top, and now he has to subjugate himself. Let's go into Sephardus. I just want to share with you now the Sephardus explanation of everything that's going on here. It's a very interesting explanation approach to this entire episode. So Pasuk Aleph told us that actually Pasuk Chav Ches reads that Yaakov decides he's going down. So he goes down, and when he hits Be'er Sheva, he brings sacrifices. Why in Be'er Sheva does he bring sacrifices? The answer is because that, as the Ramban points out, the Rashbam points out, Be'er Sheva is a place where his forefather had worshipped. It's a place where his forefather had brought sacrifices. And therefore, Be'er Sheva is where he brought his sacrifices. Why does it say that he brought the sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak? Again, why focusing on Yitzchak more than Avraham? Says the Sefornu, he offered the offerings to the God of his father Yitzchak, Sh'amar LeYitzchak Al Terid Mitzrayma. He offered the offerings to the God who had told his father Yitzchak, don't go down to Egypt. So Yaakov, very interestingly, makes the decision to go down to Egypt, but now he stops to bring a sacrifice to the God of his father Yitzchak, the God who had told Yitzchak not to go down to Egypt. It seems like now Yaakov, when he comes to Be'er Sheva, Yaakov makes the decision to go down. He starts going down, but now he seems to have a question that maybe he shouldn't be going down. Hashem told Yitzchak not to go down. I shouldn't go down either. Hashem told Yitzchak not to go down to Egypt. Why? I mean, there was a famine, right? It says there was a famine. Yitzchak was now leaving where he was. Hashem told Yitzchak to remain in the land of the Plishtim, not to go down to Egypt. Why did Hashem tell Yitzchak not to go down to Egypt? Because Yitzchak was sanctified as a carbon. Abraham had brought him up as a carbon. From then on, Yitzchak had the sanctity of a sacrifice. And therefore, he couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael. That's why Eliezer went to find. When Eliezer said to Avraham, should I bring Yitzchak? Avraham said, no, Yitzchak can't go out of Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak has come to a level of sanctity that he's not permitted to go out of Eretz Yisrael. So Yaakov now wonders, okay, so the same way my father's connections, spiritual connections, are in Eretz Yisrael specifically, maybe that's why I should be also. Now, we know that there was once before that Yaakov left. Right, when his father told him, you have to go to Lavan to find yourself a wife, his father told him to go, so he went. And actually, as he left, Hashem appeared to him, Hashem said to him, I'll bring you back. So there was a temper, he was going to leave, he had permission to leave Eretz Yisrael temporarily. But then he came back. Now he's leaving again. Now when he leaves again, he needs to know. He wants to know, is it appropriate for him to leave or not? He's bringing the sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak because he's trying to figure out, should he be going down to Egypt or not going down to Egypt, just like Hashem told his father not to go down to Egypt. Okay, so what happens? So Hashem appears to Yisrael, Bamaras Hailail, in the vision of the night. He says, Yaakov, Yaakov. Yaakov says, Hineni, Pasagimel. Vayemer anoichi hakel elokei avicha. I am the God of your father. Says the Sefornu. Ani yusha amarti lavicha al tered mitzrayma. Ani yusha emer eilecha al tered amer de mitzrayim ata. I am the God of your father. Yeah, I told your father Yitzchak not to go down. But to you I say, al tered tira amer de mitzrayma. You should not fear going down to Egypt. So the initial Anoichi Hakel Elokei Avicha, says the Sefornu, is where the Sefornu says, yes, I am the God who told your father not to go down, but I am that same God who's saying to you, you can go down. Okay, why? Why should you go down? Ki l'goy gadol asim chasham, for I will make you there into a great nation. The Sefornu explains, what is Hashem relating to Yaakov in these words? Ki omnem imihayu banecha yeshvim pei, if your children remain here in the land of Canaan, hayu mischatnim b'Canaanim u'mas'arvim imohem. They be marrying Canaanites and assimilating with them. Avo b'mitzrayim lo yikrezeh. But in Egypt, that's not going to happen. Ki lo yuchlun ha-mitzrim l'chol ha-se'ivrim lechem. We read last week, that when Yosef's brothers, before Yosef revealed himself, and Yosef had them eat with him, so the Torah says straight out, the Egyptians who ate with Yosef were in one place, the brothers of Israel were in another place, the Egyptians wouldn't eat together with the Ivrim. Because, as the Pasuk says, the Ivrim, they eat and they shepherd the animals that the Egyptians worship as a god. So therefore, there was always this separation between the Egyptians and the Ivrim, and the Hebrews, as we refer to them sometimes. So therefore, yeah, Hashem is saying to Yaakov Avinu, you need to go down to Mitzrayim. Because if you stay here in Canaan, your children, your grandchildren are going to marry Canaanites and they're going to be lost. They need to go down to Egypt so that they should be able to grow and become a nation unto themselves. Because in Egypt, they won't assimilate. Because the Egyptians won't let them. The Egyptians despise them. So therefore, Hashem says, number one, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. Why? Because I will make you a great nation there. In order to guarantee that you should not assimilate amongst the nations around you, you need to go to Egypt. That's number one. Then Pasuk Dalet reads, okay, Anoichi ered imcha mitzrayma, I will go down with you to Egypt, v'anoichi alcha gam aloi, and I will bring you up, surely bring you up. Okay? So Rashi says, Anoichi alcha, when Hashem promises Yaakov, I'll bring you up. Hashem is promising Yaakov, don't worry, you won't be buried in Egypt. I'll make sure you're buried in the land of Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. The Sefornu says, and the Sefornu is seemingly explaining the words, gam aloi, also upward. Achar sha'ale v'etziacha misham, after I take you out of Egypt, toisef mala al ma'ashohaya locha koydem idchasham. You will rise to a level that you were not at before. Ka'amrei ulalois v'naretz ahi al eretz teiva. Hashem is now telling Yaakov that as much as you're leaving Eretz Yisrael, and in your mind, Eretz Yisrael is the place to be, number one, if they stay in Eretz Yisrael, the land of Canaan, they're going to assimilate. Number two, when I take you out of Egypt, you're going to be raised to a level, you're going to be elevated to a level higher than you were before. Meaning, as the commentaries say, the Midrashim say, that going through Egypt was a process Jewish people had to go through to bring them to the point that they could receive the Torah. To receive the Torah as a people, they had to go through Egypt. They got to go through the exile of Egypt, the slavery of Egypt. They had to go through this. And now after going through that, they'd be elevated to a level that they weren't even at before. They would now be worthy of going into Eretz Yisrael with the Torah. So now Hashem is telling Yaakov, you know why you have to go down to Mitzrayim? Because when I take you out, you'll be at an even higher level. You'll be even elevated more than you were before.
But you, from time to time, when you say you, I thought...
You and your generations. According to Sefornu, it's not just Yaakov, it's about... It switches off.
Right, because right next sentence he talks about closing eyes.
Right, it switches off. It's all collective. You're right, it's a good point. It's all collective in the sense, it's Yaakov, it's his descendants, it's all one and the same. He's talking to Yaakov like his future descendants. It's one and the same. It's the Jewish people. Okay? And then he says to Yosef, then he says, the concluding part of the prophecy is, the Yosef Yashisyada Elanecha, Yosef shall place his hands on your eyes. What do you think that means? Okay. So many commentaries say that Yosef will, when a person passes away, someone is supposed to shut their eyes. It should be a son that's shutting the eyes. And Hashem tells Yaakov that this is a blessing to have that happen. And that blessing will be fulfilled, that Yosef will place his hands over your eyes.
In
Mitzrayim, exactly. Now, in Sephornu says a different explanation. The Sephornu says Yosef will place his hands over your eyes is figurative. What it means to say is, you won't have to keep your eyes open, meaning you won't have to go looking to take care of yourself. Yosef will arrange everything without you having to take care of things. And you will not have to be involved with the Egyptians that are not worthy of you being connected with them, of your associating with them. Meaning, Yosef will put his hands over your eyes, means to say, Yosef will take care of everything. So to speak, he'll put his hands over your eyes. You won't have to look into anything. Yosef will cover your eyes. Yosef will take care of everything so that you do not have to associate with the Egyptians that you don't want to. So Hashem, according to Sephornu, Hashem tells Yaakov, in your mind, you're wondering, perhaps the same way Yitzchak had to be in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, you and your family have to. Hashem says, number one, you need for your family to go to Egypt, because that will actually guarantee that they will not assimilate. Which, according to Midrashim, you know, kind of, in some way, if we put it together, we know there was a point that, or to some degree, that the Jewish people did try to assimilate into Egyptian society, at least according to some Midrashim. But, so, I don't know if the Sephornu works with that, but the Sephornu was saying that Hashem tells Abraham, your children need this. They need to be in Egypt, they need to be in a place where they're rejected and they won't assimilate. And when I take you out, number two, when I take you out, you're going to be elevated to a level that you weren't at before. It's going to be an uplifting experience. It's going to be a spiritual elevation for you. Third, if you're afraid about associating with the Egyptians that are people you don't want to associate with, Yosef will take care of that. He'll take care of all your needs. He will put his hands over your eyes. You will not have to look into taking care of anything, but rather, he'll provide everything for you. That's the Sephornu's approach here. That's the message to Yaakov. Your family needs it. You as a nation will be elevated, and Yosef will take care that you don't have to associate with the Egyptians. The Beshech Chachma has an interesting homiletical interpretation to this last part where it says, and Yosef will place his hands over your eyes. And he explains it means like this. Very often we find that when we talk about eyes, we don't always mean your physical eyes, but sometimes we talk about the eye of the mind. Your thought process is also, we find it being called an eye. You're seeing through your mind. And therefore, the Meshech Chachma says that the message to Yaakov in these words, the Yosef Yashis Yotchalinecha, Yosef will put his hands over your eyes, it means like this. Shabal Yachkar bi'iyunoi be'enav hasichlim. He should not try to figure out with the eyes of his logic, of his intellect. Al tachlis umahus ha'inyan shetzarech leidil Mitzrayim v'lalis. To try to understand, why do I really need to do this? Why do I really need to go down to Egypt and then to come back up? Kimaza tachlis v'sibel eiz ha'shleimis. What's it going to do for me? Shala Avram amar leilech l'eretz kanan lishor ha'shom b'eretz ha'myuchedis lei. Ach leilech l'mitzrayim mazat tachlis. Hashem tells the Avram, lech lecha me'artzcha, leave your land. Okay, where is he telling Avram to go to? Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. That makes a lot of sense. That, it makes sense. You're going to gain something from going to the land of Canaan. But Yaakov could be wondering, what am I going to gain from going down to Egypt of all places? So Hashem says to Yaakov, don't work so hard on trying to figure that out. Why? Ki ha'inyan shel Yosef yashir sada eleinecha. Because Yosef is going to put his hands over your eyes. That eye that we're talking about, the eye of your intellect, that wants to figure out why in the world are you going down to Egypt, Yosef is going to put his hands over your eyes. Yosef is going to cover up that eye. Yosef is going to be the model to teach you, don't try figuring it out. Why? Because would anybody ever have figured out that when Yosef was being dragged down to Egypt, what was going to come from that? No one ever understood that. When Yosef was dragged down to Egypt, what kind of a positive thing it could turn out to be? Therefore, if you're going to start wondering, Yaakov, what in the world am I going down to Egypt for? You're going to try to figure out now, what is the benefit of going down to Egypt? What's the purpose? Look at Yosef. When he down to Egypt, he had no idea why he was going down to Egypt. But at the end, Hashem, everybody saw what Hashem's plans were. You too, Yaakov. When you go down to Mitzrayim, eventually you'll come to the understanding, you and your family and your nation will come to the understanding what was the purpose of coming down for. So according to the Mesh Chachma, which he calls the Derech Tzachas, which means it's homiletical, the point here is that Yosef is the lesson to us that when you see something happening and you can't understand why it's happening, what the meaning is, what the purpose is, Yosef teaches us you can't see everything right away. Yosef went down to Egypt. No one had any understanding what the purpose was, but eventually Hashem's plan was understood. You too, Yaakov. You're going down to Egypt. You see yourself being taken out down to Egypt. It's an exile into Egypt. And you don't know what in the world for. You don't know what the purpose is. Don't try figuring that out. Let Yosef cover up your eyes. Let Yosef cover up the eye of your mind that's struggling and trying to figure out what's the point of all this. Look at Yosef and see that even if you can't understand it now, Hashem has his plan. And at some point you'll come to understand.
But in the very beginning of this parsha, at least you said that Yosef knew that this is the fulfillment, the beginning of the fulfillment of the prophecy.
Correct.
In a sense, he knew some purpose.
But he didn't understand what was that purpose. Okay. According to this approach, it would be Yaakov knows there's a prophecy, he knows there's a decree, but what's pshat? What's going on? What's the point of this? Okay. And the answer is, look at Yosef. You can't always understand the purpose when it's happening. Okay. Let's now move on a little bit further.
Battery's off. Sorry.
Okay. Page 260. Pasuk Chavches, beginning of a new paragraph by Shishi. Ves Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef. Yaakov sent Yehuda in front of him to Yosef. Lehayroyth lefanav Goshna, to repair ahead of him in Goshen. And they came to the land of Goshen. So according to the basic interpretation, Yehuda is sent ahead to start preparing a place for Yaakov and his family eventually to come to Goshen. There's a famous Rashi citing a Medrash. The word Lahayrais comes from the word Hayra'a, to teach. And that is that Yosef was sent ahead, the Sakalei Beis Talmud, to establish a house of study, Shemisham Teitzeh Hayra'a, that from there, the teaching and the guidance of Torah shall emanate. So Yaakov sent Yehuda ahead of him to establish a place for Torah study. That was first. It wasn't going to suffice. It wasn't going to suffice to first, everyone should come to Egypt, settle down, establish themselves, and then make a yeshiva. No. Even before they come, what is the first thing that's being established in their new neighborhood? A Beis HaTalmud, a place for Torah study. This is where Yaakov taught his family that even in Gullus, even in exile, there must be a place of Torah study. And the Torah study doesn't come after we've established ourselves, but rather we establish ourselves around the Beis HaTalmud, around the place of Torah study. This is what Yaakov understood as he was entering exile. What had to be first? What had to be first is a place for Torah study. Not just first settle down, get comfortable, establish yourselves, then you can make a yeshiva. Nope. First thing, that has to be there from day one, and that everything is going to revolve itself around it, is a place of Torah study. And the fact that when Jewish people found themselves in exile, and they did not establish places of Torah, that led to big problems. We know that in the United States, when Jewish immigrants were coming over and they're trying to establish themselves, they didn't create places of Torah study. They may have actually created places of Torah study for themselves, but not for their children. And the results of that was the fact that generations and generations were lost because they did not make sure that there was a place of Torah study for their children. Maybe for themselves there was, but for their children, they didn't establish that. And because their children didn't have that, they were lost. There was, for some reason, this attitude that we can't do this. We're in this new country, this new environment, the golden Medina, the golden country, and we have to give our, in order for give our children a chance, in order for our future to have a chance, they have to be just like everyone else. They have to go to public school, they have to go to their schools, and that's what they have to do. But because of the fact that they did not make sure that they would have the schools for their children, so generations were lost. They didn't take that example of Yaakov, that there has to be a place of study, that there has to be a Beis HaTalmud. Unless they took the study, I mean, they thought Yaakov Beis HaTalmud was only for adults, not for children. But clearly, Yaakov was establishing it for his whole family. Everybody needed that. It was there for everyone. And that was a mistake that many generations made. And I'd like to repeat you a story I've said here before. This actually came from a letter from Tar Masara, which is the National Society for Hebrew Day Schools. The first president of that was Samuel Feuerstein. And Rabbi Yaakov Reichenbach, who I think is still presently the president of it, wrote the following letter. He was born in Lodz, Poland in 1947. His family emigrated to Israel in 57, and in 1959 they moved to America. And where did they settle? Omaha, Nebraska. They settled in Omaha, Nebraska, in a section known, listen to this, Omaha, Nebraska had a section known as Old Jerusalem. Old Jerusalem it was called. At the turn of the century, this Old Jerusalem neighborhood boasted 9 Bate Medrash for adults. 9 Bate Medrash, 9 shuls and houses studied for adults, but not one yeshiva, not one Hebrew day school for children. Okay? And that was at the turn of the century. By the time the Reichenbach family had moved to Omaha, they were hard pressed for making a minyan. At his bar mitzvah, they sent him to yeshiva to the East Coast. And when he came back for Yontif, the members of what was referred to as the old shul asked him to join him to help him with a minyan. He had to walk an hour and a half to get there. But he went. He sat next to one of the old timers there. And after davening, this old timer named Mr. Gleich, I've written down here, broke down crying. And he took young Yaakov Reichenbach downstairs to a library in the shul, containing hundreds of extensively used svarim. I mean, it wasn't just a library. It was a library that clearly was well used. The books were worn out from use. 50 years earlier, more than 85 men, himself included, gathered for shiurim and learning. And now, by this point of time, Mr. Gleich said, all his grandchildren were Kayim. He explained his behavior. Why did he cry? He says, until you joined us, I believed Yiddishkeit would die with my generation. My tears were not for my own family situation, but out of joy, rejoicing at seeing a real Yiddish kin davening. He cried because when he saw a Yiddish kin really davening, that gave him hope for the future. But he witnessed how the generations were lost. And this was a loss that even though there were adults learning, if the children were not given a Jewish education, that sealed their fate. The lesson of Yaakov bringing a Beis HaTalmud, a yeshiva, a place of Torah study, into Galus and establishing it as number one, has to be understood not just for the adults, but for the children too. And eventually there were individuals who had the bravery and had the tenacity and the perseverance to start Hebrew day schools, to start yeshivas, even though the odds were against them, even though people thought they were crazy for doing it. Who is going to support them? Who is going to send their children there? But they stood their ground, they persevered, and now, Baruch Hashem, we have numbers-wise, probably more children in yeshivas than ever before. But because of those people who did not allow themselves to become overwhelmed and to be disappointed by the lack of enthusiasm towards that, it took time for it to happen. But there are always those individuals who fought for it and tried. Look, it wasn't just the question of learning in yeshiva that was seemingly unheard of. Not working on Shabbos was seemingly unheard of. How are you going to survive without working on Shabbos? This was a problem that many people faced. And it took the perseverance and the tenacity of a few individuals, and eventually it bore fruit. There were some of them who didn't see it in their lifetime, some of them who did see it in their lifetime, and then there were those great people who came to the shores of America and established the yeshivas and the day schools, again, against all odds. People thought they were crazy. What are you doing? No one's going to support you. No one's going to do it. No one's going to follow you. But they stuck to it, and because of that, they continued the legacy of Yaakov of establishing places of Torah study in Golus so that there should be a continuity for the Jewish people. And this, I would like to conclude with a final Hanukkah lesson as Hanukkah ends, and to tie this together because it has a very strong connection. It struck me this year that Hanukkah carries a lesson that is extremely pertinent to the times we find ourselves in. And that is that on different levels, the situation, the world situation is overwhelming. You know, there are certain physical threats that we face. Antisemitism, terrorism, mayhem. And, you know, we kind of just throw up our arms and say, what are we supposed to do about this? There's a certain feeling of being overwhelmed by the problem. There is the challenges that we face physically and spiritually. As much as I've mentioned that people say there has never been so many people studying Torah as there are now. But we all know what kind of spiritual challenges we face. Any parent, any educator, any rabbi can tell you that we face some very serious spiritual challenges. The environment around us is very, very challenging. It's very challenging to our children. It's very challenging to our young people. It's very challenging to ourselves. And when people don't realize that, it's very sad, because that means that they have lost their sensitivity to what it is to be they've lost the sensitivity to what it means to be a Torah Jew. If a person walks around thinking that nowadays we really don't face any spiritual problems, that's a problem. When you let your children, right, have open access to the internet, thinking that everything's going to be fine, and not being concerned of what's going to happen to them, not being concerned about the challenges that they're going to face, that means you're completely desensitized to what it means to be a Torah Jew. We do face some very serious threats. And again, sometimes we just feel so overwhelmed. How are we going to deal with these challenges? But you know, the Hashmonaim found themselves in the same situation. When the Hashmonaim decided to fight and to bring back the service of the Beis HaMikdash and Torah and Yiddishkeit back to the Jewish people, the odds were against them. You had a Greek government that killed anyone who studied Torah, who kept Shabbos, who did Bris Milah. The majority of Jewish people had Hellenized. There was a minority, a few people who now wanted to bring things back to where they were supposed to. The odds were against them. It couldn't work. It didn't make sense that it should work. But they understood that if they, with Mesiras Nefesh, if they dedicate themselves, then Hashem will help them. They understood that they have the power. They don't need to be overwhelmed by everything else around them. They had the power of Torah. They had the power of Mesiras Nefesh, of self-sacrifice. And with that, they would be able to be victorious. That's a lesson that we all have to keep in mind. That when we feel overwhelmed by whatever situation surrounds us, whether it be on a national level, a communal level, a personal level, and we feel overwhelmed by the circumstances around us, look at the Chashmonaim. They should have been overwhelmed by the situation around them, but they didn't get that way. They persevered, self-sacrifice, they understood, they have the power of Torah, they have the power of Tefillah, they have the power of their trust in Hashem, and that will bring them to where they need to get. And that was the power of all the people who went against the naysayers and established the yeshivas and the day schools. And because of their perseverance and understanding that no, they have the power to overcome all this, that is why we have all the yeshivas and the Hebrew day schools and so many people studying Torah like we have now. So there is a very important lesson from Hanukkah for all of us. And that is, the Chashmonaim could have been overwhelmed, they could have said the odds are against us, there's no way we can succeed, and that's not what they did. That's not what they did. And that's something that there are people who followed in their footsteps, and they succeeded in establishing what the Jewish life that we have nowadays. And it's for us to take that same lesson, never to be overwhelmed, never to feel that the odds are against us, how can we ever succeed? The Chashmonaim told us that we have the power and we have the ability to persevere and to succeed.